Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The New England Patriots of American-style professional football made sports history late Sunday, overcoming a 28-3 deficit to defeat the Atlanta Falcons 34-28 in the 51st Super Bowl in Houston, the championship game's first ever overtime win. It is New England's fifth Super Bowl victory under the leadership of quarterback Tom Brady. President Donald Trump, in a broadcast interview that aired Sunday, said he respects Russian President Vladimir Putin because he's leader of a country, although that doesn't mean he'll get along with him. Speaking with Fox News' Bill O'Reilly, Mr. Trump said he hopes to get along with him in the fight against Islamic State.
Will I get along with him? I have no idea.
He's a killer, though.
Putin's a killer. A lot of killers. Why, you think our country's so innocent?
University of Denver Russia analyst Jonathan Edelman calls that an odd statement.
Russia does not have a democratic regime. And secondly, a number of people have been killed. Since it happened in Russia, we aren't able to investigate that.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he doesn't think there's any equivalency between the U.S. and Russia. Mr. Trump and the Russian leader spoke by phone Saturday in what the White House described as a significant start to improving the relationship between the U.S. and Russia in need of repair. Hundreds of migrants were plucked from the waters of the Mediterranean this weekend by the Italian Coast Guard, an unusually high number during winter months. Max Avis, a rescue team coordinator.
So we've just done 7 rescues in about 2 days, and it was pretty tough conditions. We started, I think, at about 3 o'clock in the morning and worked basically the whole way through, and ended the next day probably about 3 in the afternoon.
According to the Italian Coast Guard, 4,500 migrants trying to get to Europe have been brought to safety to Italy since Wednesday. This is VOA News. President Trump tweeted Sunday, if something happens, blame the judge who blocked his temporary restriction on immigration travel from 7 countries. Mr. Trump said he just cannot believe a judge will put the country in such peril. A federal judge temporarily blocked the president's executive order halting travel to the U.S. by refugees and others from 7 countries that include Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. A federal appeals court rejected the administration's demand to reinstate the order right away. The case could wind up in the Supreme Court. Vice President Mike Pence defended the president's action on U.S. television.
It was not done hastily. The reality is there are people around the globe who have inspired violence here in the homeland. We just saw in the basement of the Louvre, a machete-wielding terrorist from Egypt that came into that country. I mean, the American people know that the threats that we face are real.
Pence said he's confident the administration will prevail in the case, but Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar questioned the order.
There is a difference between being bold and being rash. And when you put out an order that basically suspends the refugee program, not just in those countries, but in every country in the world, when you put out an order that you have not worked with businesses or with your professionals in the security area when you've done it, I don't think it's a surprise there's going to be court challenges.
Since the judge's decision, travelers with valid visas have been allowed to come to the U.S. Although fighting eased in eastern Ukraine, many people continue fleeing the government-held town of Avivka Sunday following intense shelling by pro-Russian separatists. Town resident Natalia Voronina said she hopes to return someday, but for now there's no electricity or water. More than 30 people have been killed in the past week. Romania's embattled Social Democratic government Sunday officially repealed a decree which decriminalized some official misconduct following large protests, the largest since the fall of communism in 1989. Protester Luciana Munteanu also demanded the government itself resign.
It's not enough.
Yeah, that's fine.
They have to go. They have to go because they show what they can do, right? We don't trust him anymore, this government. So they have to go to make sure this is not going to happen again, never forever.
Critics have voiced concerns the decree would allow corrupt politicians to be freed and encourage others to steal while in office. It's come under European Union criticism. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence Sunday called on Iran not to test the resolve of the Trump administration after imposing new sanctions on Tehran following a ballistic missile test. Defense Secretary James Mattis last week declared Iran the single biggest state sponsor of terrorism. Turkish police detained hundreds of suspected Islamic State militants in anti-terror raids across several provinces, the action coming a month after the IS group claimed responsibility for an attack at an Istanbul nightclub that killed 39. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Today is Monday, February 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's vice president says he will be a reconciler if elected to succeed President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf.
I have always said, and I'll continue to say, that you live by example. I always believe that when people see who you are, what you do, the agenda you set, they'll follow you. It may not be 100%.
Joseph Boakai is Liberia's vice president. A spokesman for Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says the country has nothing to worry about the health of the president. The DRC government will undertake all expenses for the funeral of fallen opposition leader and former Prime Minister Etienne Tshisekedi. And Sudan accuses Egypt of supporting Sudan opposition and rebels.
He's complaining of the security people in Egypt, and they are actually harboring and they are supporting the opposition, and have been many times Sudan asked them not to do that.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's Minister of Information and Central Africans, used radio network to stay safe from Lord's Resistance Army rebels. Those stories, plus Samson Omale's post in our Black History Month facts and contest, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Vice President Joseph Boakai says he will be a reconciler and uniter if elected to succeed President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf in this year's election. On corruption, Mr. Boakai says he believes in honesty and accountability, and that none of his competitors in this presidential race dispute that. But the vice president was not exactly clear whether he will implement the recommendations of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's final report. The vice president was in Washington last week and spoke with me.
I think the Liberian people know that Joseph Boakai is a reconciler. I've had to deal with that, and President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf knows that too. I believe in an inclusive government. I believe in reconciling, and I have done that over the years. And you talk about corruption. Corruption, I have said over and again, is that you check my record. For the many years I've served, none of my competitors, those who are running for office, can challenge me to that. So I have a record of believing in honesty, believing in accountability, and that's a record that none of them can take a test on.
Mr. Vice President, you can be clean when it comes to corruption, but they say that the corruption is systemic. It's in the system.
I have always said, and I'll continue to say, that you live by example. I always believe that when people see who you are, what you do, the agenda you set, they'll follow you. It may not be 100%. There will always be people who will be tempted, but that's what I've always believed in, that I live by example. I start with myself.
In the area of reconciliation, because the president said that's something that's one of the unfinished business, there are some Liberians who are saying there cannot be reconciliation without accountability. So some of them are pushing for, say, implementation of the final report of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. So I just wanted to know, where do you stand on that?
The president also said that there is a retributive justice, and there is an also restorative. Over the years, we believe that the country that we have, a small country, that we have to pursue a procedure that will reconcile people instead of putting people against people, because I do believe that in Liberia, you cannot begin to pursue one person without affecting so many. I think the Liberian people's problem is that, yes, you talk about reconciliation, but they want to see a government that is inclusive, a government that is accountable, a government that touches the lives of the people. Part of the problem is not just the TRC, it's the way in which a process takes place for people to be assured that they are on board, that they too have been considered.
So would a President Boakai administration implement or not implement the Truth and Reconciliation Commission?
The Truth and Reconciliation recommendations, a lot of them have been already implemented. Some of them are before the legislature. There are methods, some suggestion, where the Palaver Hut method, which I think we haven't done enough to bring all of those things to bear. We have talked, but people need to see all of that in action.
Mr. Vice President, your opponents, they say, Vice President Boakai should retire with President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. In addition, they feel that your age will not make you effective when you become president. So what do you think?
Thank God there is no constitutional age that you can put me to. And I know very well that a lot of people who are running who are younger than me have been in the hospital many more times than I have been. I've been moving around. I'm the only person in government, and I work every day. From since I took office, I've not had any holiday. I don't have any break. When I travel, I work. The legislature go on break 6 months, a year. We don't take break. I work every day. I start work from the morning before I get to my office. I haven't been to hospital.
That's Liberian Vice President Joseph Boakai speaking with me in Washington, D.C. A spokesman for Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says the country has nothing to worry about the health of the president. This comes as Mr. Buhari has reportedly extended his medical trip to London. Femi Adesina, special advisor on media and publicity to the president, says Mr. Buhari is waiting for results of his medical tests.
When the president was traveling originally, we issued a statement that he was going to have some rest, a vacation, and also do routine medical checkups. Now, the medical checkups have turned up some things that need to be further investigated, and that's why he's asking for more time so that the doctors can look at his health properly.
Is there any reason for Nigerians to be concerned about the health of their president?
Well, all mortals can fall sick and they can recover. So what I will ask Nigerians to do now is to extend goodwill towards the president, pray for him so that his health is completely restored.
Could he have done the medical checkup at home, or is this something special?
No, because he had always done his medicals in London even before he became president. So I guess it's a question of continuing with those who have his medical history.
You know, there's been this criticism that Nigerian officials who have the money always tend to go abroad, not utilizing their own medical facilities.
There will always be criticisms. You don't, because of criticisms, then refuse to do what you think is fit and proper.
When this news came up, you know, people go back to the former president of Nigeria, who also had a medical problem and went abroad, but was not transparent with the people until something happened. So are you all being transparent with the Nigerian people?
This president is known to be a straight person. He says it as it is. When he was going out last year on medical reasons, he got us to issue a statement stating why he was traveling. So a man that has the history of being straight with you, there's then no cause to begin to doubt him.
Do we know what the health problems are, what the concerns are?
Unless the doctors reveal, and you know we have this doctor-patient confidentiality, unless the doctors reveal or unless the president decides to reveal.
So any indication when the president will return?
Yeah, because he transmitted power and authority to his vice president, who is now the acting president. There is then no hurry. He returns when doctors have certified him. Okay.
How many weeks has the president been away?
No, he traveled on January 19th.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Femi Adesina is the special advisor of media and publicity to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. He was speaking with me from Abuja, Nigeria. Today's Monday, the 6th day of February, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Sudan has accused Egypt of supporting Sudan opposition and rebels. Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says the accusation is not directed at President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi of Egypt, but at the Egyptian security and media. Mr. Bilal denies Sudan has also been supporting the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood.
Actually, it is true. And he said that although his contacts and relations with President Sisi is very good, but yet he is complaining of the security people in Egypt.
They are not actually in good terms with Sudan. And they are actually harboring and they are supporting the opposition. And have been many times Sudan asked them not to do that. And there is a complaint from our side. And in spite of that, they are still supporting the opposition in Egypt. From our side, we didn't do that. And we told them that if you know anybody, although we have actually a lot of Egyptians in Sudan, more for the first time, almost 500,000 of Egyptians now in Sudan. And we have many people coming from Syria, from Eritrea, from Ethiopia, from other places, from south of Sudan, around about 4 million refugees and those people searching for work and this thing. But we are not supporting any sort of opposition to any of these countries. And if you find that, we just expel them.
Minister, I must say that this is shocking to me because I was under the view or consideration that President Bashir and President El-Sisi are friends, and Egypt and Sudan are friends. So how can this allegation come about? Is your president accusing President Sisi or who is in Egypt?
No. He is not accusing President Sisi. He told that he is in a very good, actually, relation with Sisi. Is fantastic, and they are very actually in contact, and the relation between them are very good. But we have two complaints from Egypt. One of them is from the media. The many times they are actually attacking Sudan, the media, and this is and another thing, security, intelligence there, and they are actually supporting. And he said this, although our relations with President Sisi is very good, but it is not the same with the security people in Egypt.
So what does your country want to do about that? Are you going to complain to the Egyptian government? What are you going to do?
In fact, we'll tackle the problem based on the good relations between the two presidents and the direct contact. And we will actually continue our pressure on the President Sisi to stop that. Egypt can play a positive role, actually, with the opposition to make them join the dialogue and the environment of reconciliation which is going on in Sudan, instead of supporting them and giving all the facilities to oppose Sudan.
If it is true now that Egypt is supporting some Sudanese rebels and opposition people, could it be that this is reciprocity? Because some time ago, there were allegations that your government was also supporting members of the Muslim Brotherhood.
In fact, I told you, if the Egyptians have alleged that we are supporting your Muslim brothers in Sudan, we told them, if you have anyone, if you pointed anyone, and if you are there is an organized Muslim brother there making opposition, next day we are going to expel them out of Sudan.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. The DRC government says it will undertake all expenses for the funeral of fallen opposition leader and former Prime Minister Etienne Tshisekedi. Lambert Mende is Minister of Information of the DRC.
First of all, the President has sent a condolence message to the family of Mr. Tshisekedi as well as the government. Secondly, we have decided by order by the president to take all the expenses relating to the funerals of Mr. Tshisekedi, his capacity of former prime minister of our country and of leader of the main opposition political party. And the interior minister is busy speaking with the family for the repatriation of the body of the late Mr. Tshisekedi. And tomorrow, probably, we shall announce the program together with the family.
He was the leader of the opposition, particularly the Rassemblement. After his death, there's been this concern in terms of where the peace process is going. I asked the other day somebody from the opposition, where are we implementing the peace, the agreement that was signed last year?
Well, we have been finalizing the arrangement of these agreements that have been signed on 31st of January. And now, since Mr. Tshisekedi died, the bishops and ourselves, we decided to postpone everything until the funerals are at the end. Then we shall resume our talks. That is the decision that has been taken for honoring him as, you know, African, as Bantu. We have to respect that leader who died, and we have to mourn him before resuming our political discussions.
So you can say so far your government is committed to implementing that agreement.
We must implement that agreement because we have already signed it.
Any concerns at all? Any reservation?
No, no, no. There is no more reservation because everybody now have signed the agreement. I think 3 days before the death of Mr. Tshisekedi, everybody came in and signed the agreement. And we did retire our reservation. So there is no more problem now.
Minister, what does your government think about M23 rebels crossing over from Uganda back into the Democratic Republic of Congo?
We are very much concerned about that development of M23 crossing the border of Uganda with guns and attacking our military in the border, because we have signed an agreement with all our neighbors, including Uganda, that nobody should allow any negative force to treat the security of another member country of CIRGL by using force or violence.
Lamba Mende is Minister of Information of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from Kinshasa. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with the 2017 CAF African Cup of Nations finals in Gabon, where Cameroon has been crowned champions of Africa as the Indomitable Lions came from behind to beat Egypt 2-1 to claim their fifth AFCON title. It was Vincent Abubakar who swept in the winner just 2 minutes before regulation time after Nicolas Nkululu equalized for Cameroon to cancel out Mohamed Elneny's opener in the 22 minutes of the encounter. It will be the first time Egypt will be defeated in the final match since 1952. For reaction on the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon's victory over the Pharaohs of Egypt, my colleague James Botti spoke with Roland Akong, news coordinator, Equinix Radio and Television in Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Thank you very, very much. As we speak, there are thousands of young Cameroonians on the streets of Yaoundé jubilating, celebrating the victory of the Indomitable Lions, the National Football Squad of Cameroon, at the 31st African Cup of Nations that just ended today in Gabon. The Lions thrashed the Egyptian side, I think 2-1, to win the most coveted trophy of the continent. This is coming after a very, very long period of time. The last time the Lions attained this side of the competition was in 2008 in Ghana. And since then, the National Football Squad of Cameroon has been unable to qualify even for the second round of the competition. So this final means a lot. It means a lot to the entire nation of Cameroon.
That was Roland Akong, news coordinator, Equinix Radio and Television in Yaoundé, Cameroon. Staying with African stories, Burkina Faso claimed the bronze medal after beating tournament favorite Ghana 1-0 in the third place match on Saturday. Elian Taure got the winner for the Burkinabes in the 89th minute on Saturday in the match the Black Stars again failed to take advantage of. The Black Stars, who have reached the semi-finals of the African Cup of Nations since their last triumph in 1982, 8 times have fallen short of improving on their 4 AFCON titles. At the end of the 3 weeks of competition, a total of 52 goals were scored in 32 matches, an average of 1.62 goals per match, as Junior Kabananga of DR Congo claimed the highest goal scorer with 3 goals in the tournament. 84 yellow cards were given with one red card, while Cameroon committed the most fouls with 138 in total, while Burkina Faso had the most goal attempts with 76 shots. 30 of those were on target. That's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 6th. On this day in 1993, black tennis player Arthur Robert Ashe died of AIDS-related pneumonia in New York. Ashe was the first African-American tennis player to win at Wimbledon and the first African-American to win the U.S. Open. Ashe fought against racial segregation in the United States, apartheid in South Africa, and on behalf of Haitian refugees. Because of his greatness as an American tennis champion and a fighter for the rights of all people, the U.S. Open Tennis Stadium in New York was named the Arthur Ashe Stadium. Also on this day in 1972, Robert Louis Douglas, founder and coach of the New York Renaissance basketball team, was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame, the first African-American to be enshrined. Nicknamed the father of the black professional basketball, Douglas owned and coached the Rens from 1923 to 1949, guiding them to a 2,318-381 record. On this day in 1867, the Peabody Fund for Black Education in the southern states of the United States was established. Its main purpose was to support elementary education by strengthening existing schools, but because it was restricted from establishing new schools, it did not benefit free slaves in the South, as there were no established schools for blacks. On this day in 1820, the first organized immigration of U.S. blacks back to Africa began. About 86 free African-American slaves left New York Harbor aboard the Mayflower of Liberia. They were going to the British colony of Sierra Leone, which had opened its borders to free African-Americans as well as fugitive slaves. Also on this day in 1945, Jamaican reggae singer and songwriter Bob Marley was born. He became the first global pop singer to come from a developing nation. Many fans around the world loved his music, which promotes Marley's vision of redemption and freedom of black people everywhere. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 6th. Congratulations to Ambrose Agio of Makurdi in Benue State, Nigeria, Mohammed Ahmed Mansour of the Ahmadiyya Muslim Mission in Monrovia, Liberia, and Ephraim Kampala of Johannesburg, South Africa. You are the winners of our February 3rd question. Alfred L. Crowley was granted a U.S. patent in 1897 for what invention? The answer, the ice cream scooper. Now here is our question for today, February 6th. Who became the unofficial black heavyweight champion in 1903? Once again, who became the unofficial black heavyweight champion in 1903? Send your answers to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. And that's it for this Monday, February 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our spokes editor Samson O'Malley, as well as our engineer Charles Hall. I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very productive week.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the northern Nigeria-based terrorist group Boko Haram. The militant group has targeted both Muslims and Christians, killing more than 20,000 people since 2009. VOA has exclusively obtained secret video shot by Boko Haram that identifies its operatives committing acts of terror. We'll discuss the violent organization on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.